Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
My attempt here was to respond to concerns for independent fact-gathering, but it's apparent that my proposal is not viewed as objective. And so therefore, I would respectfully withdraw my recommendation for this item.
And y'all let the police department mess up that day. Y'all should be ashamed.
The President of the United States has the power to pardon, and he conducted a pardon. Our statement acknowledged that we were friends with Sheriff Joe, and that's been well known, and we gave him credit for the quality of life, or I should say the lowering of crime in Maricopa County.
The concerns are that from being convicted of racially profiling, of going after our community, it's now going to be normalized.
And here with us to discuss the impact of the pardon of former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, a contentious Phoenix City Council meeting, and other stories are Barrett Morrison of Morrison Media and Abe Kwok, editorial writer for the Arizona Republic and AZ Central. Welcome, guys. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks a lot, Steve, for having us.
Abe, let's start off with the fallout from the pardon of former Sheriff Arpaio. We heard reaction from Governor Ducey there, and everyone is sort of up in arms in some way or another, and people are being defensive and whatnot. Ultimately, what is the impact of this on Arizona?
Well, I think that the pardon, not unexpected since President Trump telegraphed it, has set off amplified that whole discussion on immigration, on the crackdown on illegal immigrants. And obviously a lot of folks wanted the governor and others to speak up and denounce the pardon for various reasons. And the governor, understandably, also just wants to sidestep the entire controversy and just move on with it and give his best wishes to his friend and endorser.
One quick follow-up on that. Ultimately, no matter how someone feels about Sheriff Arpaio from an emotional standpoint or even feeling like he messed with a lot of people's lives, wasn't great. Ultimately, does this pardon matter, though, in even the short term?
The pardon does matter to progressives, to the Latino community, because it is a it wipes away from their perspective the legal finding of what Arpaio and his policies has done to the community. And so in that regard, yes, it does have long reverberations.
Barrett, you work with politicians and others in public life, sort of how to talk to the media about stuff that is sometimes difficult to talk about. I'm wondering, from the responses that you have seen to the pardon, anybody that stands out as doing either a particularly good or particularly less than good job at sort of expressing how they feel about this?
You know, I thought the John McCain statement was incredibly strong. And, you know, for a Republican to come out and talk about that, I thought, you know, the Flake statement, he wanted to have a it was soft, and yet it was also against what the president did, but it was backpedaling. I thought McCain had the right tone if you were really against this, and Flake had more of a mealy-mouthed tone if you didn't support this. But yet he still angered people probably who, you know, wanted to see this, Republicans generally, because it was so weak.
How fine a line did Republicans especially have to walk on responding to this? Because in many ways, Sheriff Arpaio is still a very popular figure among conservative Republicans,
right?
And but not with others.
You know, I think one thing to keep certainly in mind is that it was Republicans who voted out Sheriff Joe. He lost in 2016 because Republicans had turned against him. It wasn't Democrats who were always against him. It was Republicans, moderate Republicans, independents, who said, okay, we've had enough. So I don't think there was a huge downside to going against the pardon, if you will. And I think a commutation of the sentence by Trump would have been better politically speaking, you know, would have left in place a guilty of a misdemeanor, but ensure that an 84, 85-year-old man doesn't spend any time in jail. I think that would have been more defensible politically in messaging. But then again, Donald Trump just, you know, why do anything halfway?
And Abe, I know that a lot of us are excited about the possibility of Joe Arpaio as a Senate candidate too, right?
Yes, there's a lot of talk about that, especially since he himself said that he is not ruling out another run for public office. But it's just fodder for the press, for his supporters. I really don't see it as a something real.
Mm-hmm. When I was a handsome and young man back in 2001, I actually had dinner at Sheriff Joe's house. I did a story about he was considering running for governor. Again, this is 2001. He didn't run for governor. He didn't run for governor 4 years later when he was talking about it. He didn't run for governor 4 years after that when he was talking about it. This guy is perpetually talking about the next office he may run for that he will never run for. It is all about raising money. Still, remember, this guy gets postal tubs full of $25, $50 checks from people in Pennsylvania and Virginia and Washington State. They come in by the hundreds of small check donations that would make any Senate candidate jealous. So that's still just about keeping his name there. And hey, I may run. And you've got to cover it because, oh my God, he may run.
So let me pose this to both of you then. Now that he has been pardoned, what is his role? What is, I guess, his place sort of in politics and public life going forward? Abe, why don't I start with you?
Well, I think that the fact that the governor was so cautious in his response to the pardon shows that there's the same base of supporters for Joe Arpaio are the same. It is partly the same for Ducey, for Trump, and for Republicans, and so in that regard,
there's still a base of support there in some Republican circles. That's what you're saying.
Yes,
just like Trump will never lose his 35%, Joe Arpaio will never lose his 35-40%. They will always be there with him no matter what. Because again, it's you people in the media, you people going
right
after him for doing his job. So, it's that 35% that will stick with him no matter what. And it's the same, those are also the same voters as Doug Ducey and Mark Brnovich and all those guys.
So, contentious Phoenix City Council meeting earlier this week went a long time. People were upset about was there going to be an independent review, figuring out whether police acted in the right way following the Trump rally. Barrett, jump in briefly on this one and say, a council meeting like that, even the council members were confused as far as what to do about it. So what do you think about the reaction to that and the fact that Ed Zuercher has now pulled out the possibility of doing an independent review at this point?
You know, I got to say, I think there's so much being made of this issue. How many people were taken to the hospital? I don't think any people were taken. I don't think there was one person taken to the hospital because of that. I think the Phoenix police have done a good job. Yesterday they had a news conference. They showed video, people throwing the smoke grenades at them, people throwing bottles at them, and then police responding with a measured response. They used tear gas and pepper spray and things like that to disperse the crowd. It's easy to second guess. Maybe their instructions weren't loud enough or something. But I'll tell you, from the scene that showed on those videos, I think police acted in an appropriate way. And I don't know that there needs to be a big outside review. Hey, maybe they were too quick on something, or they weren't loud enough in their warnings. But it looks like the Phoenix police did a great job of protecting life and ensuring that people could leave there walking, standing on their own 2 feet.
Yeah, it seems like the protesters have little ground for asking for an independent review in the sense that the Phoenix Police Department was very straightforward and said, we'll listen, we'll meet with the community, and we'll review our policies and the protocol, and maybe there be better ample warning. Maybe we would use a different level of force. In particular, the projectiles that was shot at some of the protesters, but this, you have to understand that the protest took place in the aftermath of Charlottesville. And so Phoenix police did show up, you know, in full riot gear, and that should have telegraphed to the protesters that they were they weren't going to take a lot of unrest.
Yeah, but I mean, should we expect police to shoot marshmallows at the protesters? You know, you've got to disperse them when they're getting rowdy and unruly to prevent the violence that we saw at Charlottesville. I think you could have had a very explosive situation in downtown Phoenix, and it was handled well, I think, by the police to ensure that you didn't have a lot of people injured.
Whether or not there ultimately is an independent review, and the police department is going to do its own internal review, but do you think that anything constructive will come out of this? I mean, do you think that the protesters who were there, who were upset with how the police responded, will be able to get their point across? And do you think that the police will be able to convince the protesters, if that's what the police department wants to do, that, hey, look, we were acting in self-defense. We did what we thought was the measured, appropriate thing to do?
I don't know that you'll ever be able to convince, people, you'll never be able to convince people that Trump is wrong on anything. And, some people, you'll never be able to convince them that he's right on anything. The police, when you look at those videos from yesterday and some of the other stuff, they had a measured response. Whether you can convince someone who is in it and who, had to breathe through the gas or whatever, you may never be able to convince them. But I think for the reasonable person who is watching that stuff, the police did a good job.
Yeah, and I think that maybe the next time we have a major protest and there are elements of Antifa and other far left anarchist elements in the crowd, the folks who show up to these protests will understand that, hey, there's that risk that we face. If something breaks out, we might be tear gassed, we might be shot at, with projectiles, and they will take appropriate measures.
That's Abe Kwok of the Arizona Republican, AZ Central. Also here for our Friday newscast, Barrett Marson of Marson Media. Coming up next, we'll talk about where former City Councilman Winkle goes from Mesa, and we'll talk about a little bit more on the newscast as the show continues. Good morning. Thanks for listening to the show here on 91.5. We're in the midst of our newscap segment. We'll return to that conversation in a bit. But first, Councilman Ryan Winkle was removed from office Thursday at a disciplinary hearing in the Mesa Council Chambers. The hearing came after Winkle was convicted of his second DUI in 8 years. From KJZZ's East Valley Bureau, Jimmy Jenkins was at the hearing. Jimmy, what did the council decide to do?
They heard testimony from a special counsel on charges that Winkle had violated the city charter. He was accused of violating the code of ethics and displaying conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness for office. This is special counsel Charles Workin. He was pretty emphatic that Winkle had done both.
In this situation, the extreme DUI, which was really a super extreme DUI, but it was pled down, is grave by itself. But the totality of the circumstances make it even worse.
Workin said that included lying to police and then not taking responsibility for his actions. But Winkle's attorney, Tim Lasota, his main argument was that his client had taken responsibility. He accepted guilt. He served jail time. He's actually still on house arrest. And that the council shouldn't sit in judgment of him.
This is a decision that should be left to the voters. It is a misdemeanor conviction. It is very serious. But it ought to be left to them how to judge Mr. Winkle. We have very robust provisions for dealing with situations in which the public feels that they've been let down by a member. This is why we have recall.
So obviously Lasota said he didn't think his client should be recalled either, but if Winkle was to be removed from office, that's how it should be done. But that argument, Steve, had little effect. After hearing testimony from both sides, the mayor asked for a motion, and Vice Mayor David Luna said with a heavy heart he motioned to find that Winkle had violated the charter, and they already had this drawn up and ready, and the motion included removing him from office for the offense, and everyone voted in favor of it.
So Winkle's attorney, Lasota, did try to avoid this hearing, though. So what was the offer there?
Lasota sent a letter to the council offering that Winkle pay a $2,000 fine to the Mesa General Fund or to a charity. This is in addition to court fees. He's already been assessed for the DUI. He would accept a censure from the council, and then he said he would abstain from drinking for the rest of his term. Mm-hmm. So the mayor, who runs the city council meetings, he brought up this letter at the start of the meeting and asked if any of the other council members wanted to consider it, and no one said anything. So they just moved on with the hearing.
Jimmy, if we look at the calendar, Winkle was arrested in May, and since we both know our dates, it's September 1st. Why did it take so long to get to this point?
Well, the council said they wanted to let the courts establish a verdict, so they waited until he accepted the extreme DUI charge. Then they had this hearing. Before this, they had a meeting on how to proceed, decided to hire this outside counsel working. So they had to get the process in place, but everything we heard Thursday moved relatively quickly. Once they heard all the testimony, their decision was immediate. It seemed like they went in knowing the outcome. We learned from Winkle's testimony that the mayor had actually asked him to resign. He said several times, but he wanted to make his case, and I think he was a bit surprised at the outcome.
Based on how Winkle has reacted to this, it seems that maybe he didn't get the magnitude, the seriousness of his actions. Is that unfair?
Yeah, well, we heard from Mesa Council Public Information Officer Randy Policar. He said he met with Winkle the Monday after this incident, and he said he was completely without remorse or guilt. He was thinking of ways to get positive spin out of it, and no, it didn't seem like he really got it. But we heard from a Tempe police officer who said he saw Winkle almost hit three people. They had to jump out of the way. Someone dropped their phone, and, you know, this was his second DUI in 8 years. Workin asked him if he had been driving drunk at any time between the two arrests, and this was Winkle's response.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I usually try not to.
Usually try not to.
Right.
Now, after he was removed from office, he was in tears. I think maybe then the seriousness of all this, Steve, truly hit him when he realized that he'd lost his position.
So now that Winkle has lost his position, what's next?
The council has 30 days to replace him. City officials told me in previous instances where you have to replace someone, you put out a call for resumes from the district, District 3 in this case, and they would select someone to serve out the remainder of his term.
KJZZ's Jimmy Jenkins. Jimmy, thanks for joining us on the NewsCap.
You're welcome, Steve. Thank you.
This is the show on KJZZ 91.5. You're listening to our Friday NewsCap with Steve Goldstein. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. Our panelists today, Barrett Marson of Marson Media and Abe Kwok, editorial writer for the Arizona Republic and AZ Central. Guys, we just heard about former Mesa Councilman Winkle. What do you make of how this whole thing went down?
Well, I think that the optics were bad for the councilman from the get-go, right? You know, you have a stop. You have him denying to police of drinking, and then, you know, as the events unfold, you have this city official saying that testifying or writing a affidavit saying that the councilman accused the police of overplaying, stressing some of the elements or misleading elements of the arrest. And leading even up to the disciplinary hearing in which he offers to pay like $2,000 to make the hearing go away, there was just a whole series of missteps and so what the ouster at the very end of all this came as really no surprise.
Well, and also remember that same city employee, I believe, said that. Councilman Winkle said this could be good for his political career. He was a little wrong on that. I'm interested to see who applies, who sends in a resume to the Phoenix or Mesa City Council. Jerry Lewis, who was defeated by Councilman Winkle in the election, it was a close race. And we all know Jerry Lewis. He has been around. He's been in the state Senate before. He was a good public servant. So I'm interested to see if he applies. And I think that would be a good choice for the council to make.
And gentlemen, let's move on to who Jeff Flake may be challenged by in the Republican primary. He's getting it from the left. He's getting it from the right. Challenged Donald Trump in his book, Conscience of a Conservative. Barrett, let's start with you. So we're hearing that Robert Graham, Jeff DeWitt, met this week to try to figure out who gets to jump in with Kelly Ward to challenge Jeff Flake.
And I think you'll see something next week pop on that. You know, Robert Graham, I think, is probably the leading one to do it. You know, Jeff DeWitt, who has been in the Trump orbit for well over a year now, and he hasn't jumped in yet. So I think that shows us he's not really interested. I think he wants to be in the administration or even in Trump world, not necessarily the administration, but the private business. But I don't know that he has the stomach for a statewide, grueling campaign where, you know, a lot of your peccadilloes will be on display on statewide TV. That's never fun.
Politicians have peccadilloes? I didn't
mean to say. Let me tell you. That's never fun. So I actually think Graham would have a good chance. I think he'd have the money. He certainly has the temperament to run a statewide race. He was chair of the state party for 4 years or whatever that was. So he has a good resume and knows how to get into this world. So I think he's got the leading edge right now.
What do you think of the possibility of both Kelly Ward, Robert Graham, slash Jeff DeWitt running in the same primary, does that help flake?
Oh, that ensures a flake victory. If Robert Graham does get in, he must then convince, or somebody must convince Kelly Ward, who didn't even come close to beating John McCain last year in the Republican primary. Somebody must convince her. She must step aside for a person who doesn't have a ready-made nickname of Chemtrail Kelly.
How unusual is it for somebody like Robert Graham, who, you know, typically a state party stays neutral in party primaries? He was the head of the state party. Now he's creating more of a primary.
I am sure there are a lot of quotes from Robert Graham about how great Jeff Flake is, and those quotes will be resurrected, I have no doubt. But, you know, you can just go, look, things have changed, and here is a guy going against our president and everything else. And, again, you start out with sort of almost the 35% base. You know, Flake isn't well known. Flake has done more for Cuba than for Mesa, I think a lot of people will say. So I think that if Robert Graham get into the race, I think you're going to see a very spectacular race, a very close race, something interesting. If it just remains Kelly Ward versus Flake, you can write it off and go straight to the general and let's talk about Sinema versus Flake.
Right, but it does present a challenge to the Republican Party because obviously there are some elements within the GOP that don't think Kelly Ward is the candidate, even though all the polling so far has shown her to be like leading by 15-20%.
You know, the Republican Party for many years I've been hearing has, you know, this inner battle, this battle for the soul. The Republicans control every single statewide elected office here. I don't know that that's going to change next year.
So are you saying that a soul doesn't matter then? Or
I'm saying that voters will come home to the Republican Party because they have led and led well here in Arizona.
Well, so finally, do you think Flake will emerge from this victorious, whether or not, as Abe suggests, Graham and Ward are in together? Does Flake need those two to fight it out for him to win?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Flake either needs people to stay out or more people to get in. I mean, he can beat Kelly Ward one-on-one. He can beat Kelly Ward and Graham or DeWitt or whoever, you know, three-on-one. But get a real candidate like Graham, that's going to be a problem.
And Abe, just a few seconds. What do you think about that?
It would be a good litmus test about Trump's influence in the midterms and elections. And Flake will be a good test of that because whoever Trump backs is going to determine whether the Republicans are behind him for real or he's just for the presidential.
Yeah, the base will be there. When Trump does pick someone, the base will be there for that person.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.